I just finished the book by Chuck Klosterman, known as The 90s. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who is known as a pop culture critic. His best-known work previously is probably Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. Ironically enough, the title of Eli's upcoming memoir.
Yes, that's correct.
So I know it's hard to boil down any decade. One person's experience is vastly different from another's. Klosterman tries to do that. First of all, how old are we? Let's go around the table. I'm 34. So again, grew up in the 90s for sure.
Just turned 40.
Okay. Eli?
Just turned 41. So
there you go.
So Sean and I we're buddies this topic because we were, you were maybe a little younger, remember the early 90s?
Of
Sean
course.
And I were square in the middle of it.
But the Raj Mahal was with it enough on the, I guess, the pop culture scene that he shared a lot with you that you're not like most 34-year-olds.
Sure.
You can talk Bash Brothers with me and me and Eli.
Yes.
And all the 90s Attitude Era wrestling you want.
Yeah, I feel like I experienced the early 90s in the late 90s when I was developing consciousness and he's playing Pearl Jam and Nirvana mm-hmm. in the car and Soundgarden, right, and the whole Seattle scene.
Or Silverchair, like the return cut we just heard there.
The first album that I bought, I remember that. The question is, right, first CD that you bought.
Was it Frog Stomp?
Frog Stomp.
Wow.
That's right.
Wow,
that's a
marvelous. Frog Stomp.
It's been a minute since I've given Frog Stomp
yes.
a spin.
Yeah.
Go give it a listen. And those guys are all like 15 years old when they recorded that album, too. Now they're like 50, which makes me sad.
Because they're all turning 50, which is...
Yeah, like the Toadies guys all have like gray hair and bifocals now, and you're just like, oh, come on.
It's really weird. Really weird. But the Klosterman book, the cover of it is a telephone.
Yep.
It's clear, so you can see the inside.
That's
of
right.
It.
First of all, an actual phone.
An actual phone
that
with a cord.
Plugs in.
Landline.
Remember those.
Which again, I had one of those.
And again, there are so many tangents that we could go off. I'm going to try to focus this to the things that really stuck out to me. I highly recommend the book. Many chapters all along the way. Listen, they cover the 92, 96, and even the 2000 presidential elections.
Oh, yeah.
You know, again, very serious stuff. I wanted to have some fun here. So, he makes the argument, Klosterman does, that the decade didn't really start until the release of this song. Iconic.
And this came out in 1991?
September of 1991.
The start of my senior year in high school, let me tell you.
There you go. That changed everything.
Killed hair metal.
Yes. Killed all the hair bands. I like this line from Klosterman. He says, the video for Smells Like Teen Spirit, which again is awesome. Even I watched it last week as I was finishing the book. Go back and revisit that. Just the pep rally from hell.
Right.
With Cobain, Chris Novoselic, Dave Grohl. The segment is not going to be about Dave Grohl. Mm-hmm. But we do have to mention Nirvana. The video was not more consequential than the reunification of Germany, Klosterman writes. But soon, any attempt to understand young people had to begin with an understanding of why Kurt Cobain looked and acted the way that he did.
He's wearing the Freddy Krueger sweater in the video. And yeah, it was something. I know the Seattle grunge scene started before this blew up, but this really thrust it out on the mainstream because back in the day, kids, MTV used to show videos all the time, which was a better time in this world because it was placeholder television. And when this dropped, you saw this twice an hour, probably.
Yeah. You're just sitting around waiting for the Black Hole Sun video, or Smells Like Teen Spirit,
or waiting for Beavis and Butthead to start
Beavis
at six.
Exactly. Where they would make fun of said videos and offer their commentary. So, yes, that becomes mainstream. It's just, it's crazy to think about now, 30 years later, like, what rock band is really mainstream? That's a thing of the past. Like, actually popular in the pop charts, these songs would go to number one. Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and I hate the term grunge. They're all from Seattle, but they just got lumped in together, even though Soundgarden and Alice in Chains were very different, but they're all lumped together. So, very quickly, I had never heard of this. Klosterman writes about the ad campaign by Subaru.
Okay.
all of a sudden, with this being mainstream now,
so this is post-80s when they all had Paul Hogan in the commercials, like during the Crocodile Dundee craze of 86.
Yes.
Well, he was a Subaru guy, wasn't he?
Yeah. Which we also lived through, unfortunately.
Sure. So that's a knife.
Right. So a year later, 1992, Subaru says, "Well, we gotta sell cars with this. Listen to this 30-second ad.
You got my new Subaru Impreza and explain its relevance to you and me and the car business, okay? Okay. This car is like punk rock. Now, just trust me, this is relevant. Do you remember when rock and roll was really boring and corporate? Well, punk challenged all this and said, hey, excuse me, but here's what's cool about music, remember? Now, Subaru, with this Impreza, is challenging some car thinking here. This car is all about reminding you and me what's great about a car and moving forward and making cars better and less disappointing. Just like punk, except it's cars. Oh, I just thought of another analogy.
Subaru Impreza, a compact car. A 2 or 4 door sedan.
Who was the dork that was narrating so
that's
that?
That's a fun fact, Eli. Does the name Jeremy Davies ring a bell at all?
No.
It might not.
No relation.
If, thank you, Jer. You might have seen him on Lost. He played Daniel Faraday. He's an actor. He was an up-and-coming actor booking commercials at the time. It's like, that's the dude from Lost. Subaru is saying, this car is like punk rock. Of course, everyone is just trying to latch onto it immediately. Yeah.
I guess that sort of draws in the olds, too, because at that point in time, the Ramones were like, I don't know, 15 years removed, right? That's when the whole punk wave started. So now this grunge wave, I guess you're trying to grab two demographics with a statement like that, I suppose. Man, it's... 90s ads were something. Like, you ever go back and watch like a classic game like you have on VHS or you've digitized? Some of those ads are
just on YouTube, but the ads still included.
And you remember all of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, even the local ones, you know, from Westway 4.
Right.
The 12-12 loop 12 guy. That was,
Which that drop lives on here at the Ticket, which is amazing.
12-12, loop 12.
There he is.
Thank you. Yes. And of course, the music industry changes dramatically in the 90s. You know, you're paying $17 for a CD for an album. And now, of course, it's a flat $10 a month for all the music in the world.
Yeah, it's different.
Went directly into your Case Logic, which you fumbled about trying to find the CD as you were driving.
At a stoplight, hopefully.
Yeah, no, usually not.
I tell you what, though, I do miss going to Good Records or Sound Warehouse.
Best Buy.
Anywhere.
Like all the new albums used to come out on Tuesdays, I think. Was it Tuesdays or Thursdays? Mm-hmm. And you'd go pretty much once every couple weeks.
And sometimes there was a line. Yeah. Like you had to get there earlier, that hot new album to get picked off.
Yeah, if the new Radiohead album was dropping or whoever it may be. Yeah, sometimes you'd have to get there and wait for a minute.
Yes. And again, file sharing, Napster, killed all of that. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden,
those were the days. Yeah. I really like this song. I'll start downloading it when I leave for class at 8:30 in the morning. You get back and you're like, all right, 86%.
Yeah. Almost there.
Almost there, baby.
LimeWire, you guys do LimeWire?
A little bit. Yeah. I was more of a Napster.
Yeah, sure. Yep. So from music to the internet in the 90s, the rise of the internet, just that phrase, information superhighway, just how ridiculous sounds in retrospect. And we have to play this classic clip, 1994, from the Today Show, Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric, What Am Internet?
Back in 56 pass, I wasn't prepared to translate that as I was doing that little tease.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Little mark with the A and then the ring around it?
At?
See, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Katie said she thought it was about.
Yeah. Oh.
But I'd never heard it. I'd never heard it said. I'd always seen the mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
I heard it around or about in the lunchroom. Yeah.
See, there it is. Violence at NBC. GE.com. I mean,
Allison should know.
What is internet anyway?
Internet is that massive computer network, the one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? That's big. How does one? What do you write to it like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
No, she can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Okay, that's good.
Allison will be in the studio.
Yeah, let's make fun of the producer. Yeah. Don't worry. We don't.
And they're just back there shaking their heads like, no, I cannot explain what it is. Like, I know.
And this classic sound, AOL.
This was happening when I was in college, and you did not go to a dorm room, an apartment, a library, anything where you didn't hear this sound over and over again.
The AOL chat rooms and the AOL Instant Messenger was such a game changer. Because that was a sweet spot. Because I think like knowing some parents now and their kids aren't wanting to drive at 16, we all were champing at the bit to get our driver's license like a hardship at 15. And the instant messenger was a way to quickly, because back in the day you had to call somebody's house and ask permission to speak to your friend.
Yes.
And a lot of times the gatekeeper was the mom or the dad.
Yep.
This completely bypassed that whole thing. So you could just come up with so much hood rat stuff in the 90s.
AIM.
Take a spin, now you're in with the techno set. You're going surfing on the internet.
Wow.
Golly.
What is the internet anyway? Maybe the most ironic story in the book. I didn't realize the internet was the downfall of the Unabomber in 1996. How Ted Kaczynski was caught in Montana. Again, he terrorized the nation with the mail bombs. Between 1978 and 1995, he killed 3 people, injured 23. His whole platform was anti-technology.
And when you think Unabomber, what's the first thing you think of, or the two things you think of? I think of the hoodie with the the big
The sketch.
That's
what everybody thought he looked like.
Right, exactly.
The composite sketch.
And then he comes out with the orange jumpsuit and just wild-ass hair.
It's like Mountain Man.
That's right. So in 1995, Kaczynski typed out his manifesto, Industrial Society and Its Future. Basically, technology bad, environment good. He sent it to the Washington Post and the New York Times. He claims that he will continue mailing bombs unless this gets printed. The FBI gets involved. Everyone decides, hey, let's print this and let's see if anyone can recognize how he writes, his syntax, his language. And Klosterman argues that even though the word internet is mentioned only once in the 35,000 word manifesto, Kaczynski is really arguing against the rise of the internet and all the evils of technology. So Linda Patrick was the wife of Ted Kaczynski's younger brother, David. She reads it. She tells David, this sounds like your brother. You have to read this. Because Ted Kaczynski had sent David and Linda letters when he was living off the grid in Montana. They had kept up with him. David goes to the newsstand. Remember those? The Times and the Post are sold out. He goes to a local college library. They had a newspaper, but the section with the op-eds and the manifesto is gone. The librarian says, you know, you can read it on the computer, you know. David Kaczynski says, here I am on this newfangled technology, trying to figure out if my brother is this anti-technology terrorist. He reads and he says, oh my God, that's my brother. Tells the FBI, this is where he is in Montana. They've got the address. That's how he gets captured.
Wow.
The internet did him in.
One smart librarian tipped off the FBI.
Yes.
That's incredible.
And finally, do we have a little more time?
We have plenty of time.
Okay.
Don't you worry.
The rise of social media, you could argue, happened in the 90s, even well before Facebook, Twitter, so on and so forth.
MySpace,
yeah, sure. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Again, like you talked about with AIM, a form of it, right? That instant communication, keeping up with people. Go to the OJ car chase. And I know we just had that anniversary recently. We played the Wheels Off audio of Peter Jennings getting pranked by somebody. Baba Booey, right? Howard Stern. And then that's right. And Al Michaels, trying to correct Peter Jennings, which was hilarious. Chuck Klosterman, again, this is from the book, his book, The 90s. You have, during that car chase, bystanders cheering for OJ.
Sure.
Right? On the overpasses.
They had signs. Yeah.
The juice is loose. And I thought this is well put. Klosterman writes, this drove the mechanism for social media. The desire of uninformed people to be involved with the news, broadcasting their support for a homicidal maniac, not because they liked him, but because it was exhilarating to participate in an experience all of society was experiencing at once.
During the finals.
Yes.
Rockets Knicks.
June 17th, 1994.
We're worried about Hakeem. Like, come on.
Right,
come on,
and that's
man.
In the little box.
Climb yeah. to glide. What's yeah. going on here?
That's in the little box on the screen. You got OJ in the big box at the top of the screen.
I try to convey to my daughters who they've grown up with technology. They've never known anything different. And
sure.
it's so wild to them that it took us that long to get the internet just fast. Because I tried to explain the dial-up thing, and they were just blown away that everybody had to be off the phone
yes.
in the house for your dial-up to work.
As soon as someone picked up the phone, it was over.
Yeah, and if mom or dad
right
had
off.
To make a call, get
Sorry.
Off.
You're logging off.
Internet time's over for now.
Exactly. And now it's just at their fingertips.
Yeah,
it's wild, man. What a wild decade between the I don't know Mossimo stuff and Big Johnson yeah. t-shirts.
Oh my God,
like the Jordan shoes, like really like launched in the mid '80s,
taking
but really took off in the '90s.
Like the best part of like the Super Bowl commercials in those Cowboys years was the Jordan commercial. Like how is Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan gonna pull this one off this year?
They're just bright neon colors because everyone wore. Dressed like Andre Agassi in the '90s for some reason.
Well, everybody did, and I know that fashion is cyclical and everything comes back eventually. I'm having a hard time believing now that we're 20, almost 30 years removed from some of those eras of fashion. The big pants and the JNCOs we had
that was ridiculous.
I guess that'll come back with somebody. I have a hard time.
Maybe the hot pink like Umbro shorts will make a reappearance at some point.
Okay.
Man, the starter jackets.
Yeah, that's
See,
right.
Now, I can get behind that.
The Jimmy starter jacket.
Well, he had the Apex jacket at first.
Okay. Yes, the Apex was the first one, and then Starter came in and sniped him.
And your friends would just go to the mall, and they would be in such short supply, they would just get a random team. Like the Charlotte Hornets starter jacket was like the big one.
It's just a cool-ass jacket.
It is, because the Mavericks were terrible then. And we would always dunk on the dude that had the Maverick starter jacket.
Yeah, they won 13 games last year. Sweet jacket, bro.
You guys were talking about the music of this year and the starter jackets. The other part of music of this decade was the explosion of hip-hop.
Absolutely.
And it drove all of those fashion trends.
Yeah, and listen, there's a great chapter as well. You know, Two Live Crew, the Obscenity Case, all of that. Yep. Waging
NWA.
War. And yes, absolutely.
And them somehow collaborating with the early 90s Hurricanes, to, which was just fantastic.
Yeah. And we had Risky Forever, the artist that did the Don Caluminati like cover art for Tupac. And I remember in high school, that's all we listened to was Biggie and Tupac. And there was always like this question of, which coast do you prefer? We're just suburban white kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Which click do you claim?
I made a pro and con list of East Coast and West Coast.
Yeah. Well, East Coast, they've got really good pizza in New York.
We were not about it. We were just a bunch of nerds that were like, oh, this is on MTV, let's listen to this.
Yes, this is pretty awesome, exactly.
And if somebody can get me one of those Logo Athletic shark tooth hats the Cowboys wore in the early 90s, that would be much appreciated.
What do you miss the most?
I would 100% rock one of those.
What do you miss the most? Is it something in fashion, music, maybe a lack of technology? I think that
just not. I think the thing I miss the most is not having a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah.
But beyond that,
the amount of food we were putting away at that time.
Yeah,
of life.
And not gaining any weight.
Yeah.
Golly.
My hair.
Yeah, your hair.
There's a lot of things.
Yeah, I miss my hair from the 90s.
Oh, boy. Sorry, Daddy.
Oh, Daddy. Poor Daddy.
But
well,
yeah,
just go tweet a porn
star. It was a
fun
decade. I'm glad we did this segment because...
Ted, really?
Come on.
Really?
What? That's his therapy, right?
Yeah.
That's what he said?
We all have our outlet.
Okay. Sorry.
Keep shooting.
That's right. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
And we barely even scratched the surface, really, with
a
conversation.
These are just some of the things that really struck me. You guys would find something completely different. Like, man, that really stays with you. How about this? Just in the first chapter, just the experience of 90s life. Let's see if you agree with this. It was an this is from Chuck Klosterman, his book, The 90s. An adversarial relationship with the unseemliness of trying too hard. It was a period of ambivalence defined by an overwhelming assumption that life, and particularly American life, was underwhelming. Again, you think of slacker culture and the Gen X and, you know, all those slackers. And
but then there were the preppies that, you know, yeah, wore Tommy Hilfiger and tucked in shirts and tried to look the part.
The weaved belt that you, like, fed back through and had kind of flopping down, like, over your crotch.
Maybe a nice silk shirt with your Marthy and Franco Easter bows.
Yes, sir.
Butter.
Z Cavaricci's.
Z Cavaricci.
I have no idea what you're saying.
You kids don't even know. You don't even know.
I don't
know nothing about fashion. You
might know something about the Doc Martin boots, but
yes, I do know that.
Yeah, polo boots for life. All right, that's great. We could do a segment a day on
polo
that.
Boots for life.